was evil, and no one is good.
Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves, and never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need, and practice hospitality. I have to say that some of my thoughts for today came out of a great article called Building a Place for Hospitality by a professor, Christine Pohl, down at the Center for Christian Ethics at Baylor University. You've got to love the internet. Great article. Did you know that there was a time before inns and hotels and restaurants when everybody needed the hospitality of a stranger? I mean, think about it. There weren't any inns, very few. There weren't any restaurants. And when people would travel from place to place, particularly back in biblical times, they needed a stranger's help. I mean, how far could you get on foot on a day? That's the way the world worked. And so that concept of hospitality, while we think it's a nice idea, was actually an incredibly central virtue to the way the ancient world worked. What it meant to be civilized, what it meant to be human, was to be hospitable. So I want to give you a kind of a quick overview here. The Bible is full of stories of people giving and receiving hospitality. And by hospitality, I mean food, shelter, protection, recognition, conversation. One of the earliest ones is Abraham and Sarah, who are entertaining angels. Remember that? And then they predict that Sarah's going to have a baby, and she laughs at that. But they were practicing hospitality. The Good Samaritan, we love that story. It's hospitality. Jesus, in being invited to eat in the homes of sinners, as far as we can tell, Jesus never turned down an invite for free food. Ever. If someone had the nerve to ask him, he went. Hospitality. And then Jesus even pushed the envelope of hospitality and challenged people to welcome not just the important people, but everyone. And that's the responsive reading that we did today. He was pushing the envelope, if you will, of hospitality. Invite someone to dinner that can't have you back over. The early church grew so fast that this need for hospitality was really great because people began, right, to travel and spread the good news. And right there, right at the beginning of Acts, the church is persecuted in Jerusalem and the church is scattered. And people have to start going out and they start meeting strangers and they start staying in people's homes. And that sense of hospitality to friends that we haven't even met yet became a hallmark of the early church. Of course, it also opened the doorway to abuse because you know as well as I do that, well, you know, not everybody is as hardworking as you. There were people who certainly abused that sense of hospitality, and Paul even writes about it. People who took advantage and stayed longer than they're welcome. What's the joke? You know, guests should stay for 3 days. But guests are like fish. They start to smell after 3 days or something like that. You know, I think that's an ancient kind of biblical principle. You know, 3 days was pretty good. People who were lazy and then wouldn't help out. So, I mean, there was abuse even that in early church, and you can read about it in Paul. So some basic rules were put together for how to give and receive hospitality. And we don't think of it this way, but Paul even writes about it. You know, basically, you can stay a few days unless you're willing to work. And if you're willing to work and earn your keep, you can stay a little longer. There were structures to help hospitality work over the long haul so that people wouldn't get burned out, that they wouldn't become negligent, that they wouldn't become grudging hospitality. And if you go back and read some of Paul's letters through that lens, you will see it popping up just simply everywhere, more than I could share today. Everywhere. Because people didn't stay, they didn't come to town and stay at the Sugarloaf Hotel. They stayed at your house. Well, those early congregations And those early churches became known as places where poor people, impoverished people, strange people, aliens, meaning from another country, could find help. And the early church got really good at this. And they became so good at it that they had to make it a little institutional. They had to institutionalize it a little bit. Right at the beginning of Acts, you even see, very quickly they realized that the 12 disciples couldn't do it all, so they invented deacons, right? To serve the orphans, to serve the widows and the poor. And that daily distribution, it started really on that kind of codifying and structuring of hospitality. And it was very, very early, I don't know the dates off the top of my head, but very early, where they even began to have separate buildings to take care of the needy. There wasn't any social security, right? There wasn't any pensions. There wasn't any social safety net. If you didn't have a son to take care of you, widows were destitute. That whole idea that, you know, that sons were better for you to have than daughters, because sons took care of the mothers, took care of the elderly. And there wasn't any social safety net. So the early church did a really, really good job. And they didn't just take care of card-carrying members. They took care of anybody. Anybody who showed up, they cared for them. And it got to be such a place, and if you read some of the other religions of those days, particularly the Greeks, they became very embarrassed. They had to start these institutions as well, not because they really wanted to, but because the Christians were putting them to shame, and you can read all about that. They learned they better imitate that care and concern, or they were going to lose all of their followers. Isn't that interesting? It was that care and concern. One of the early slanders for the early church was, oh, see how they love one another, which was not a compliment in those days. So Christian people have gotten really good at taking care. We marvel at the establishing of institutions of care. Institutions. Hospitals. How many of you have ever been to a Catholic hospital? Ever? Earl and I served in a Catholic hospital, St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Brighton, Massachusetts. Some of the best experience we ever had in learning to be ministers happened at that Catholic diocesan hospital. Orphanages. There's Catholic charities still running orphanages, and particularly placement for, I don't want to say unwanted, that's not a good word, placement for children who need homes. Hospice programs. How about food pantries? Ever been to a church food pantry? It's called the Economic Ministry here. We support it very heavily. We're very active as a church, not necessarily as individuals, but food pantries and food closets, the Good Shepherd Food Bank. Can anybody think of any other kind of institutions that are known as kind of Christian institutions of caring? Anybody ever think of any? There's a lot. I have a friend, a classmate of Earl's, actually, Herb Taylor, who runs a retirement home, which is a Christian retirement. I forget what denomination it's with. Presbyterians, maybe. Everyone knows. Hospitals, orphanages, food for the poor. Housing for the homeless. Ministry. Not just church buildings. Don't make the mistake of thinking that they don't think churches ever built with church buildings. How about, these aren't really necessarily hospitality based, but how about colleges and universities? Can you think of any college in Maine that wasn't started by a religious institution outside the UMA system? Bates, Bowdoin, Colby, they were all started by religious institutions. We went to Bates, so it was the Free Will Baptist that gave us a head start. Dartmouth, Harvard, all of them have some undergirding of religiosity. And all these institutions Christians have now been critical, become critical in our society, whether Christian people are still involved in them or not. A lot of times they are no longer associated with the Christian faith, but they're still pretty critical to our society. But this is what I want, this is the caveat that I want us to remember. Efforts to make hospitality more widely available and predictable have unintended consequences for the church. When you have an institution like a hospital or an orphanage or a place for the poor, those people who are receiving aid can get disconnected from their family. They have to travel miles and miles and miles to get there. They're no longer with their family and supports them. Oftentimes, they're hidden from public view. Some of the earliest institutions we had for those who were mentally retarded were started by Christians, but it took those people out of public view, and then they kind of disappeared from society. People became cared for by the institution, not so much by an individual or even a congregation like ours. And then a lot of the institutions were taken over by either the state or detached from their roots in the church. We see that all the time. But biblical hospitality is about people helping people. And we became so successful at that that we actually began to fail. Now, when I use the word hospitality today, what kind of things do you think of? What do you think of when I use the word hospitality? Where is that word even used anymore? Think of the hospitality industry. We have a whole hospitality industry, which I think is kind of an oxymoron. The Radisson, the Comfort Inn, that's the hospitality industry. Or mostly we talk about hospitality in terms of entertaining family or friends at holidays in particular. But the church, the followers of Jesus, is kind of where hospitality was invented. And so it's important as we come to the table, how are we doing? How are we doing as a primary place for hospitality? Now, hospitality can feel so vague, it can also feel kind of overwhelming, it could be easy to burn out. Sometimes it's helpful in a church to have some people, my little unauthorized care monologue notwithstanding, sometimes it is helpful in a church to have certain people who are at least assigned to the role of looking out for other people, as long as that doesn't become just their job and nobody else's. To watch for that, but the magic happens, and I think you would say this is true in your own life, the magic happens when people help people, when individuals connect with individuals. And I think, and it's too bad Bill and Louise are not here, I mean, I don't know if y'all heard the story about the bicycles. Did everybody hear the story about the bicycles? Bill and Louise, you know, were cyclists for many, many years, and Bill hauled Louise all over the world and all over the country and all through France. Ask Louise to tell you a biking story someday. And they put a lot of miles on those bikes. And they caught wind that that Tina was looking for a bike for her son Joel. Really wanted to have Joel have an opportunity. They lived down in the city, just to be able to get around. And they had an idea. And Bill got those bikes out and cleaned them all off, and he oiled them all up, and he got them all ready. And Jerry took both of those bicycles down to Tina and Joel, and they were so delighted. They went over. They were so happy. It was such a gift to them. They were just overwhelming and gushing. That's hospitality. That's meeting a need. Was it necessarily about bringing someone right into your home? Well, that's often how we think of hospitality. But it was about meeting a need and about people helping people. I think of Donovan, too. Donovan's always kind of helping people. She's one of those people that will do that. Our friend Tim Richter, who passed away, person after person got up and said, he would give you the shirt off his back and he would give away yours, too, if you weren't paying attention. That was the kind of common phrase. In terms of a giving and generous nature, he always had a pot of goulash on the stove, which was this kind of undefined thing that nobody ever knew quite what went in it, and he didn't really know quite what went in it, and it was never replicated twice. He was known as the creative cook. But there was always room for more at the table. In some ways, hospitality really just comes down to character. Who you are, who you're becoming, who you want to be. Who are you while you're helping someone else? And true hospitality, and I know this is kind of intellectual, I'm trying to move it to your heart, but in true hospitality, the lines get really blurred between the person who's helping and the person who's being helped, the giver and the receiver. It's important in Christian hospitality to try and flatten those roles. One of the critiques of Christianity is, you know, that we go in and we help. And we get this kind of reputation. And I'm sure John and Lori realized when they went to go and help in Africa, they received at least as much, or if not more, than what they thought they were coming to give. And that is real hospitality, when those lines get blurred. You see bumper stickers, you know, buy local, you know? And this whole thing now about, you know, buying from local farmers. Well, the same is true for us. Serve locally. Real people. Helping real people. I've been getting phone calls lately for help, financial help for people from Jay. And we kind of decided, boy, that Jay is just too far. I mean, there's a lot of churches between here and Jay. There's a lot of opportunities for help. And I don't know who gave my name out or who gave our number out to somebody down there. But I'd be in a different county. And how do you kind of say to folks, you know, get involved with a local church. You know, within, you know, 20 miles of where you live. That's not here. Hard to say that, but to be local. So let's join in creatively thinking of ways that we can be a blessing to this community, our community, or the community where you live. That's not hierarchical. You know, it's not just about helping somebody. But a way that is reciprocal, a way that invites community. The one way to do this is to invite the receiver to be involved in sharing the blessings. I know down in the economic ministry, people who receive food from the food pantry are invited and encouraged to come in and help organize the shelves and help to serve. So that it's not just about giving and receiving. Because a lot of folks don't really, and you're probably like this too, you don't really want a handout. You don't really want to be given stuff, you know? And certainly in Maine, a lot of people really just don't want, you know, to be helped. So when it becomes a reciprocal meeting and a coming together, I think that works a lot. We had the ski school last winter. We had that basket of food for the ski school, and people could take from it and people could put stuff in it. And I think at the end, what I did at the end of the season was I took what was left over and brought it down to the economic ministry. There was probably just about as much food in there as when I originally stocked it. In December, but it was different food. It wasn't the food I had bought to seed it with. So it went in and it went out, it went in and went out. So let's be thinking for this fall and this winter about how to reconnect hospitality and community in this area, in our community, in our Sugarloaf community, in our homes and in our congregation. And I think that's going to be key for us is that, you know, we're a small congregation that has a really big impact. And thinking about these things, I really think will make a difference. And not just allowing, you know, the institutionalization of help to happen. Those things are important. But the magic is about you and I helping Bob and Susie, whoever they may be. On an individual level and in our homes and welcoming people into the ordinary parts of our lives, and some of us do that better than others. And as a congregation, you know, I wonder, how do we help people that are new in town? How do we even find out about them? Even if they're short-term people. You know, would sharing meals be a welcome experience, even for temporary workers? Skip used to always have a potluck and invite folks. He has a big ministry, actually, of welcoming people, particularly ski school folks. I don't know what it's going to be for us. But true life-giving hospitality is rarely efficient, and it's often inconvenient. And it looks a lot more like interruptions at a first glance. It's countercultural, and it asks us to examine our priorities. But you know what? That's how Jesus lived. He was the master of hospitality, of making and helping people feel welcome, and of connecting with people. Would you join me in prayer? Lord God, you first welcomed us into your life, into your home, into your people. And God, as we walk this way, Help us to see how we are your hands and feet in the world and how we offer hospitality. How we make it meaningful to connect with people in our community. And how we make it practical. And how we make it so it's not just about, you know, us giving somebody else something, but that together, being community. God, your people have been doing this for years. It has been one of the hallmarks of your people. And we would join and think creatively. I mean, we do it a lot. But I think it is one of the keys to be aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it. Because you first loved us. We have very few people here today. And so in the spirit of prayer, I'm going to invite that you all come down and let's form a circle around the table.